Here's Andy Udman.
Legend has it, he was born from the sea, used a salt shaker as a baby rattle, and hated the taste of broccoli until it was sprinkled with those magic crystals. His name was Mort, and he came from Canada to contemplate the mineral deposits deep under North America. He became fascinated by the extraordinary benefits offered by each tiny granule, those miracle molecules critical for nutrition and health, for water conditioning, and for safe passage on snowy winter roads.
When light beer was produced, people drank more, of course. When we cut the sugar out of soft drinks, people swilled a great deal more of low-cal beverages. When we cut the fat out of foods, people gorged themselves on low-fat, no-fat foods to the extent of ushering in the current obesity epidemic.
Okay, Ryan, I got a quick question for you. When you were a teenager, did you put ketchup on everything?
Oh, a fair amount of stuff.
I had a friend who cooked a steak. He had company over, and a teenager reached for the ketchup.
I put HP on my steak.
And he said, if you touch that ketchup, I'm going to kill you. Now, second question. What about salt?
I don't put salt on anything.
We had three boys. Oh. One of them just everything. Salt, soup, it doesn't matter. Salt on everything.
Yeah.
We almost got to blows with him about salt. Now, here's the question. Is salt good for you or bad for you? Very simple question there, Mr. Ryan Spence.
Well, I mean, in the last number of years, society would tell us that salt isn't good for
us. It's evil.
Yes.
You take too much salt, your head will explode. Your heart will shoot right out of your left ear. No, the horror stories we've heard about salt. I mean, you take too much salt, your blood pressure, it'll blow the top off your head. According to some of the stories we've heard. I thought salt was good for you. I remember in Sunday school learning texts in the Bible about salt. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. Pam Colleen, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Andy. How are you?
The Bible, and that goes way back, is full of references to salt and how important it is.
Throughout generations, civilizations have used salt. It's never, ever been something that joined the dark side. It's only been recently in history where salt has joined the dark side, but it's something that ancestors for generations used and celebrated.
We are about to meet a scientist. I call him the Sultan of Salt. He calls himself the Salt Guru. And he will tell us that salt is not bad for you. Salt is good for you. In fact, Ryan, if I can get you to play audio bite number two, salt two, that's actually number three, but salt two, about the health benefits of salt.
But, you know, sitting around staring at salt crystals doesn't accomplish much.
So, Mort went on to become an international expert in nutrition and food product development. Introducing the first high-fiber breads to North America. Developing the technology. For all gluten-free breads, leading the effort to supplement foods with folic acid, sparing millions of children brain and spinal defects, and to the delight of kids and athletes all over the world, creating the technology behind shelf-stable coconut water. Oh yeah, he also received praise from global leaders like Mother Teresa and picked up a nomination for the World Food Prize. Not bad for a backwoods Canuck, eh?
He's the salt guru. He's the Sultan of Salt. Pam, would you introduce our guest this morning?
That's right. This morning we have Morton Satin. He is the Vice President of Science and Research with the Salt Institute. Good morning, Morton.
Good morning. How are you?
We're good, Morton. I mean, you're a scientist. There's a million other things you could have researched. Why salt?
Ah, very, very interesting. The main reason why I'm really interested in salt is because it's getting such a bad rap. And because really all my life I've been vested in science and the dissemination of proper science, this was one area that I thought the public really wasn't getting all the information.
And we're eating less salt today than ever before in the history of mankind, and yet look at how sick we are. So why the disconnect? Why aren't people seeing that, you know, salt really should be reintroduced into our diets?
Well, first of all, there's a misperception. Most people think we're eating more salt than we ever have, and in fact, we haven't. If you go back to the literature, at least the written literature published as far back as 200 years ago, you find out that we consumed about twice the amount of salt than we do now. And the reason is, of course, because all food was preserved with salt in those days. And it was only since the end of the Second World War, when refrigeration took over the major task of food preservation from salt, that our salt dropped very significantly in the 10 years after the Second World War. It dropped by about half, and it stayed stable ever since. Hasn't dropped anything since, let's say, the 50s. And you should bear in mind that when that salt level dropped in half in that 10-year period from the end of the Second World War to, let's say, the late 50s, that was done without any large campaign, without anybody saying to drop your salt. It was just a natural gravitation towards a more fresh food supply from the traditional preserved food supply.
Morton, let me jump in, because even right from the beginning, Pam says we're eating less salt. See, I didn't know that. I mean, all the stories I hear, we're eating more salt than ever. I hear the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, who's on a major health kick, of course, says that 21 companies have now met targets in New York City's efforts to get restaurants and food manufacturers to cut back on salt in foods, ranging from hot dogs to soup. I read that salt cuts, if we were able to cut salt out of our diet to a reasonable level, would save 500,000 lives in the U.S. over the next 10 years. So obviously I've been watching a different channel than you've been living on.
Very, very interesting. Yes, you have. No, you've actually been watching public TV, shall we say, everything that's being fed to the public. Now we're starting to see, and I will quote them soon, publications coming out that it's been a terrible injustice to the public, all the peer-reviewed scientific data that effectively has been hidden. But let's go back to the first thing. Bloomberg is saying that there's a great success. He's got 21 companies to sign on to reduce the salt. Now, I don't know what his measure of success is. I thought the measure of success for public officials dealing with the citizens of the city is better health. So if there was a measure showing that New Yorkers, as an example, were healthier, then he could declare public success. But for him to say that companies have cut down on salt, how does that relate to greater success? Now, if they cut down on salt in processed foods, what do consumers do? Do they add salt back on their own? That's one thing that some people may do. Or what's worse, because we do have a built-in salt appetite, or sodium appetite, rather, do people eat more food in order to satisfy their sodium appetite? So on the surface, his goal of cutting back on salt essentially is political. He can make a claim that he got 21 companies to sign on. But what has that done for the consumers? There's absolutely no measure of any health benefit given to the consumers because of this move.
Morton, let me jump in.
And possibly some damage because of them overeating foods in order to get at the sodium levels.
Morton, I was a kid on the farm, and I remember one thing when I was looking at your website this morning, that my dad always put a block of salt out for the cows, and I know the cows loved it, but why did we do that?
Okay, because there is a built-in sodium appetite in all mammals, and cattle have to have sodium. I mean, sodium is an essential nutrient. It's not something that we can live without. It is an essential nutrient. It controls the blood pressure in our circulatory system, the chloride. It helps us develop the acid that we require to digest food in our stomach. It's an essential nutrient. So we have to have a certain amount of it. And just as cattle, humans also have to have a certain amount of it. The big argument is how much we should have. There's absolutely no question, however, that it's essential. And in fact, it is so essential that sodium chloride or salt is used, for instance, in the feed industry, to control the amount of feed a cattle is fed. It's not used so much on range-fed beef, but when you bring them to a feedlot and you're giving them this high-priced feed, if you don't want them to eat too much, you put a lot of salt into that diet, and their sodium appetite will be satisfied very quickly. If you want to fatten them up quickly, what you do is you cut back on the salt. So they'll eat more in order to get at the sodium that's in the food. Now, what happens when consumers have lower salt levels in their processed foods. Are they going to eat more? I mean, that's something. Is it going to contribute to the obesity epidemic? So these are things that we have no idea what the evidence is on these things yet. But we go ahead and promulgate these policies without looking at the long-term impact of them on our diet.
Now, what
the
is
the other thing is cutting back on salt. What is extremely important is the one thing everybody agrees upon is that the burden of disease in almost all countries is related to the access of, to vegetables and salads, because vegetables and salads are extremely healthy because of their very nutritious phytonutrients. And phytonutrients are generally bitter. And that is why salads and vegetables, the word salad comes from sal, S-A-L, salt. And that's why you can't eat a salad without a bit of salt, or else it's like eating grass. Kids don't eat broccoli without salt. So by cutting back on the salt in the diet, what you're really doing is discouraging people from eating the most nutritious elements that we could in our diet.
Now, what would be an average dose for an average human, would you say?
Right now, now you mustn't confuse salt with sodium. The average level of salt consumed is somewhere around between 8.5 and 9 grams. Now, that's not only here in North America. That's all over the world. Every country eats within this narrow range of salt. Now, why is that? Different food supplies, different cultures, different tastes. Why do human beings, no matter where they are in the world, with the exception of very primitive societies who don't have access to salt.
But they're getting their salt maybe from blood or from, you know, burning marshes or what have you, right? They're getting salt somehow.
They're various natural sources. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is every civilized society around the world, no matter what culture they're from, they're all eating in this very, very narrow range of sodium consumption. Mm-hmm.
Doctor, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment so that you can leave them with a takeaway message. You are the Sultan of Salt, the Salt Guru. I want you to pepper them with a parting message when we come back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
When light beer was produced, people drank more, of course. When we cut the sugar out of soft drinks, people swilled a great deal more than low-cal beverages. When we cut the fat out of foods, people gorged themselves on low-fat, no-fat foods to the extent of ushering in the current obesity epidemic.
Our guest, Morton Satin, we call him the Sultan of Salt. Pam, you were just during the break sharing a list of what the medical research, the science shows, happens with people if you cut out or reduce their salt intake, and it's not pretty.
Right. If you reduce your consumption of salt, and this is in the literature, and Morton can talk about this, you're going to see more problems with low birth weight babies. You're going to see increased rates of falls and fractures among the elderly. You're going to see a higher mortality and readmissions rate for heart patients. And also, there's this myth in and around hypertension as well with salt. I think that that's one of the greatest myths, I think, with regards to our overconsumption of salt, is this notion that it's going to cause all sorts of increased blood pressure and so on.
Morton, everything we hear says there is a holy marriage between salt and higher blood pressure. Your comment.
As a matter of fact, there was just a very recent publication, I can actually give you the quote, out of New Zealand, showing that, in fact, salt does not contribute to a high blood pressure. It was in the journal Nephrology in December of 2012, published by Todd et al. From New Zealand. And the title of the article is "Dietary Sodium Loading in Normal Healthy People Does Not Increase Blood Pressure." As simple as that. I mean, you have to bear in mind that the current recommendations for salt. As an example, I don't want to mix up the two, is between 4 and 6 grams of salt per day. That's the current recommendations. When you go to the hospital, in order for them to keep you healthy, when you're in the hospital for a stay, they hook up an IV, a saline or sodium chloride IV. contains 0.9% sodium chloride. They give you an average of 3 liters a day. Just from the drip, never mind the food, just from that drip that they're keeping you on, you get 27 grams of salt a day in order to keep you in great shape. Okay? Mm-hmm. Their recommendation is 4 to 6 grams. Now, how can people who get 27 grams of salt a day and have their blood pressure measured every 4 to 6 hours while they're in the hospital and it stays stable, how can you, in fact, say that sodium chloride contributes to high blood pressure in normal people?
Martin, I wish we had more time. I'll tell you, the blood pressure of the people in this city has just soared because their heads are spinning over what you're saying, that salt is not evil. And all the good things that we read about salt in the Bible are true. We have just a moment left. Dr. Mort, if you, for those people who are listening this morning, they want to find out about this Sultan of Salt, the Salt Guru, where can they go?
Oh, well, they can go to the Salt Institute website. That's www.saltinstitute, one word, .org. And what they ought to really do is scan the literature for any peer-reviewed evidence that talks about salt and blood pressure, because the most recent publication came out of Columbia University, Professor Bayer, professor at the Center for Ethics of Public Health, concluded that the concealment of scientific evidence by our public health establishment has done no one any good and has certainly not served the interests of consumers.
Martin, I have to stop it there. I got to tell you, I love you for this, because my wife and I have been buying salt-free bacon at Costco, and I'll tell you, when we go for the next load, it's going to be the one with the salt.
The tasty one.
The tasty one. Mort, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Morton.
The Salt Guru.
The Salt Guru.
You have a couple of things you want to mention, Pam.
Right. Well, I have a lot of upcoming classes. I have one this weekend, Saturday afternoon, at the Central Library, and it's part of my nutrition boot camp. And then next Wednesday, the 20th, I'm teaching a class on copper and dental health. And then, of course, Andy, we've got David Carmichael coming on the 21st.
So he's glad you mentioned.
Us. Yes.
Pam, I got to give you a high five. David Carmichael's hour with us the other day, the man who strangled his own 11-year-old son at the Holiday Inn in South London, now says, no, he didn't get away with murder. GlaxoSmithKline got away with murder. It's an incredible story. We've had such amazing response. He's coming next Thursday. He's going to be in studio with you, with me, and folks can
And then at 7 o'clock that night on the Thursday, the 21st, he's going to be doing a presentation. I'm going to host the presentation at the library. Stevenson and Hunt's probably side B, I think, is what we're going to be in. And then he's going to invite questions from the audience as well.
I've never shaken the hand of a man who killed his own son.
It's quite a tragic story, but I think it's a story that has to be told. This is quite cathartic for him as part of his healing. And I think that, unfortunately, there is a lot of people who don't understand what happened. He doesn't understand what happened to him under the influence of Paxil. But what he wants to do is, of course, prevent others from suffering as much as he and his family have suffered,
folks,
and prevent deaths as well.
Folks, you want to join us right here next Thursday on CJBK. We're going to do a full hour with David Carmichael, who strangled his own son and now is on a crusade to educate people about the evil side effects of some of these drugs on some people. Thanks, Pam. That's an awesome 10:30 news update. When we come back, I want to talk about this incredibly strange story from Florida.